Welcome to the first in a series of podcasts produced by expatriate law solicitors to assist British expatriates who are considering divorce or separation. Today's podcast will focus on Spain. I am delighted to welcome Christopher Lee, who is a highly experienced family lawyer who established his own law firm in Spain in 1994. Christopher is a dual qualified English and Spanish lawyer. Christopher specialises in divorce, financial provision and adjustment, child contact and abduction, as well as prenuptial agreements. The majority of Christopher's clients are expatriates living in Spain or English-speaking people requiring legal advice in Spain. I'm going to start by asking Christopher a few questions that are relevant to divorce and separation in Spain. So firstly, Christopher, good morning.
Hello, good morning to you.
Can British expatriates divorce through the Spanish courts?
Absolutely. They can, obviously, if they fulfil the rules on jurisdiction. And so basically that's linked under European rules to habitual residence. Where are they living? If one of the spouses is living in Spain, that will be enough for the other spouse to file for divorce in Spain, or the spouse who's actually living there can also go to the court and ask for a divorce if they're non-Spanish, they have to have lived there for 12 months. So there's a range of hooks, as it were, on which you could hang the divorce and get divorced there, but they're primarily linked to living in Spain.
Brilliant. And in England, a couple have to be married for a year before they've divorced.
Yeah.
Is that similar in Spain?
It's less. 3 months. As long as you've been married for 3 months, then you can get divorced. Obviously, in England, a big difference would be that you have to show a cause. It has to be unreasonable behaviour or adultery or split for a certain period of time living apart. In Spain, it's no cause. You don't have to assert any cause at all. No reason.
Right, so
just
no,
want a divorce.
No fault divorce.
No fault.
Okay, brilliant. And how long does it take?
Well, the process can take a long time simply because quite often in Spain the courts are overworked, understaffed. Some courts are better than others and some courts are a lot worse than others. So the process itself can take a long time, particularly if we're talking about maybe one of the wife's living in California and he's living in Vigo. The court itself will have to serve her with proceedings. And in order to serve her, they might find difficulties being out of the jurisdiction. She's in California. He can't serve her, his lawyers can't serve her, and we have to hang around while the court gets its act into gear and manages to do it and manages to receive back through international recorded delivery a docket which says that she's actually been served so we can prove it. And I'm seeing nowadays more and more Spanish courts actually very modern emailing the person who's outside the jurisdiction and inviting them in broken English, but writing in English, inviting them to get in contact with the court to try and arrange service where it's difficult. So sometimes the process is elongated simply because it's quite difficult to get past that stage when they're served. But once they've been served, they've got 20 working days to put in a defence, if they're going to put in a defence, to the divorce petition. And then the court, there is no time limit when the court must do this, and they're very busy, but the court will have to set a date for the hearing. If there are children, they may have to be interviewed by court psychologists. That can take some time, simply
right.
Because the court psychologist service can be
yeah.
really overworked.
Yeah.
But we can short-circuit the whole thing, because we can also divorce in Spain, not in a court at all. We can go to a public notary.
If the parties are in agreement?
If the parties in agreement, have to be in agreement, no children issues, then they could divorce before a public notary. That's a very new facility. We can also do agreed divorces in the court, which will mean maybe there's children involved, but they've agreed everything. That's wonderful. There's no court hearing at all then. And again, in those situations where we've got one spouse in Spain and one spouse is in Australia, when it's an agreed divorce like that, there's no court hearing, and that wife in Australia need never come to the Spanish court. Okay. She can do a power of attorney before a notary. Spain loves notaries. You know, notaries are gods. She can do a power of attorney, sign it before a notary in Australia, allowing our court agents and us to ratify the agreement for divorce when the court asks for it to be ratified. And they will be divorced. And that's a relatively quick process, again, depending how quickly the court gets through the piles of work they've got to do.
And can that agreed process include a drafted agreement?
Yes, we would. We would draft. This is. I think we're getting towards this thing about, which is very prevalent, obviously, in the UK, mediation, collaborative law. We don't have. It's not a big thing in Spain, trained mediators. Mediators in family law tended to be psychologists, perhaps, and maybe not lawyers. But if we've got in a situation where it's going to probably be agreed, or there is a hope that it could be agreed, then as lawyers, we will act in a way as mediators, and we would want the other person to have their own lawyer.
Right.
Although that's particularly my firm will insist on that. But there, I've seen a number of divorces done in Spain where that's that conflict of interest type situation isn't recognised so much, and you get one lawyer who's doing the whole thing. And I've seen people where it's come unstuck afterwards. They come to us and they say, well, we agree this, but I didn't really understand what I was agreeing. I didn't really read Spanish. And it's the Latin phrase, horrible legal phrase, caveat emptor, buyer beware. You know, that is very foolish.
Yes.
They do it, but so many people are living in the sun and think, this is how it's done here. I'm told this is how it's done here. Well, you would never dream of doing it outside
they
Spain.
They need proper legal advice.
Their own legal advice, independent legal advice. Yep. But if everybody's agreed on something, there's a Spanish phrase which in translation means a bad deal, a bad settlement is better than a good trial.
Right.
And you know, who wants this Spanish judge to be deciding everything about our kids and us? You might not get 100%, but you probably never get 100% at trial.
Yes.
It'll cost a lot more. There'll be a lot of anxiety. Yeah. And one of the big things is that when those kids are getting married in their 20s, you and your ex are both there having a nice time with your new partners and you're not daggers drawn.
Yes,
and it wasn't a process that was ghastly.
Yes.
Well, it's always going to be ghastly, but not that ghastly.
And Christopher, is the law uniform all over Spain?
No, it's not. It's in Spain, I think it's 17 or is it 14, I don't know, autonomous regions, and each one has some variance and in family law as well as in other aspects of the law.
So how is the law applied?
Yes, well, in another difference for divorcing, say, in the UK, is that in Spain, the court can apply different countries' laws in relation to the same divorce process and to different strands within the same divorce process. So, for example, all children's issues will be dealt with under Spanish law with a local overlay. An example, in Catalonia, when we're dealing with underage children, in Catalonia, you have to put in a divorce parental plan. So if we're doing an agreed divorce relating to children in Catalonia, but it wouldn't be the same in Madrid, we would have to say, this parental plan is pretty amazing, we have to find out what extracurricular activities the kids are doing. So you have to put in there that the little girl's doing ballet on a Tuesday, and the little boy's doing volleyball on a, it sounds very sexist, but you put in, you put in what they're actually doing. I mean, it's pretty amazing because in 2 terms' time, they're going to be doing something else. But anyway,
I think
that's
that
in Catalonia.
Helps the parents, doesn't
well, yeah,
it,
maybe, but that's what, that part of Spain wants you to put in. So children in Spanish law with a local overlay, asset split can be very different. The civil code in Spain governs this, and it says that it must be dealt with under the law, the common law of nationality. But of course, we could have an Australian and a Brit. So there's no joint common law. Then the civil code says you look at what did those parents or husband and wife, what did they agree, or of course, same-sex marriage, husband and husband, wife and wife, what did they agree in a prenuptial agreement? Not a post-nup, but a prenup. Many, many people don't have prenups. So let's say this couple didn't have one. The third tier you go down to then, and it says the law to be applied to split those assets will be the law of the place where that couple first lived after divorce. But ignore the honeymoon.
Right.
Okay?
Gosh.
So they were posted to, I don't know, Mongolia. Well, it's going to be the law of Mongolia. I had one the other week, which was Qatar. That will be a very, very different, I'm sure, very, very different asset split from in Qatar than one would be expecting, that a Spanish judge would be expecting. Mm. But how does a Spanish judge know what Qatari law says?
Yes.
Good. Well, doesn't know. We have to tell them. So we have to go to Qatari lawyers and we say to them, this is the situation, these are the assets. What would a Qatari judge applying Qatari law be likely to say in that situation? And they do a certificate of law, which we put to the Spanish judge. Similarly, if it was they lived in Australia, what does Australian law say?
So, in summary, when an expatriate couple living in Spain, if they're not of the same nationality, then the law that will apply to the division of assets is the law of the place they lived in after their marriage.
Yeah, but before you, there's that bit in between, that if they don't have the common nationality, you look and see, did they agree a prenup?
Yes.
But if they didn't, it's where they lived immediately after marriage,
Right, that's interesting. What about maintenance, child and spouse?
Yes, well, child maintenance is going to be, if the children are in Spain, as they will probably be, or they might be, children dealt with under Spanish law living in Spain, the maintenance for the children will be on basis of need. It will be under Spanish law.
Right. And how long does the child maintenance last?
Till they're financially independent.
Right.
So could
that be post-ACA?
Well, in Spain, it could be a very long, because traditionally in Spain, kids, you know, stay at home, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, they're still studying, and they study at universities locally. Mm. Usually they don't go away. So that could be a long haul.
So child maintenance could continue
until... Yes, it can continue. Yes, they're financially independent.
Right.
Yeah.
And what about maintenance for a wife?
Wife or husband or whatever, yes. That would be driven by another EU set of rules. And the maintenance regulation, and that would be again based really where the person requiring the support was living. So if she requires support, she hasn't worked because she's looked after the kids, and she's living in Madrid, then it would be local Spanish law with that's what would be applied, and it would be a question of need really. It would be a question of need. It's not a people say meal ticket for life. Mm. It depends on age. Mm. I've got a case at the moment where the lady's in her 50s, never worked for many decades. Obviously, we're looking for the rest of her life, really, to have maintenance.
So, in a way, similar to the approach in England.
Yes, but with assets and with maintenance, the sort of big money figures, Spain is not a jurisdiction which is used to that.
Right.
So, some people will say, and people know this, you know, London is the divorce capital of the world.
Yes.
If she's much richer than he is, and they have a house in Spain, and they're often living there, and there's a choice of jurisdiction, you could say, from her point of view, she gets in first, and she issues for divorce in Spain. Well, that's great from her point of view, because Spain is not a jurisdiction which generally makes big awards. It's not going to make a big award financially to him. Mm. But if they're both English, as regards asset split... and there was no prenuptial agreement. Well, we don't get that part to that far because they're just both English. So that it's English law that's going to be applied. And so you might say, isn't the position going to be the same? That she's going to get a hefty order made against her by the Spanish court applying English law. Mm. And it'll be the same as if she'd got in first. Or sorry, he got in first and divorced in England. Mm. Well, the answer is, technically, maybe it should be the same. But a Spanish judge just does not have the mindset of... An English judge isn't used to making big, big money orders. Mm. So although we could have a certificate of law which said, and we think this the lawyer in England saying, I think, you know, the order will be X. If that's really the sort of figure that a Spanish judge is not used to seeing, it's difficult to keep them in the mindset. It probably won't be the same
because
order.
His training is in Spanish law.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And what about in England during the financial settlement process, the husband and the wife will produce financial disclosure by way of usually a standard form with supporting documents.
Yes.
What's the process in Spain?
Very different again. You know, an EU country, just like the United Kingdom still, but it's very, very different. And I think this stems from the fact that in Spain, there is no perjury for principal parties in civil litigation. So put it another way, and put it very crudely, in a way, a Spanish judge is going to be expecting a husband or a wife not to be telling the truth.
Right.
Because there is no comeback. In England, if you've got, there are cases, as you know, Alexandra, in England, if you've got a, there's a very wealthy husband not so long ago who was hiding, taking great pains to hide.
You could be sent to prison.
Yeah. You can't be in Spain.
Right.
You can't incriminate yourself in that way.
Right.
So affidavit evidence, sworn statement evidence, which you'll see a lot in American litigation, Australian litigation, English litigation, where people are swearing to what their lifestyle was like, to how they used to live, what sort of holidays they had, what was spent. That won't mean anything. We don't have affidavits in that way. Mm. What we want in a Spanish divorce scenario is to show documentary evidence, particularly documentary evidence which is, as it were, stamped by independent third parties. So land registry certificates which show who owned the property, bank statements which show how much was in there. Often in Spain, as regards income, if it's a person who's not an employee, it's pretty disastrous if you're trying to make a claim, because the chances are in Spain, you know, tax evasion is still endemic, and the chances are they are not in their tax returns in Spain making full disclosure and accurate disclosure of what they earn. Mm. So she says to us, you know, he makes 100,000, a lot of it's in cash, When we call for his tax return, it will not show 100,000, and we can't prove it.
So this is a very important further consideration.
It is, if you've got a jurisdiction.
If there is a jurisdiction option.
Absolutely. Yeah. My goodness me, if we've got, very important, you know, I always think the first meeting is the most important meeting of all. If there is a possible choice of jurisdictions, depending who one is acting for.
So wealthy husband.
Wealthy husband might very, a case that became very well known years ago, and he got into he issued in for divorce proceedings about 20 minutes before she did. Issued in Spain before, 20 minutes before she did in the UK. That was potentially a disaster from her point of view. It was a big money case.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's...
And the importance of seeking that early advice to weigh up the different jurisdictions.
Yes, to see what might be the result. In many instances, of course, I mean, in relation to children, which is just as important, if not more important than financials. Children, basically, it's easy to say. You say, the position is going to be the same. Any civilised jurisdiction which might be able to divorce you, the children, the best interests of the child, also in Spain.
Yeah.
There'll be different. How do we determine those best interests? In England, the child will never be spoken to by the judge.
Always
a CAFCAS officer. Mm. In Spain, child psychologists are appointed. They will speak to children. But the judge might well say, and I see this a lot, the judge might want to see the children and will speak to the children themselves.
Gosh, they do that.
Children as young as, particularly in abduction situations, children as young as six, I've seen, spoken to by a judge.
Gosh, yes, that would
in a child-appropriate way, we hope.
Yeah.
And you see verbatim, you know, transcripts, you aren't present, but there may be a translator if the child isn't able to communicate with the judge. But you see verbatim transcripts of what's been said. But quite often judges themselves want to see the children. Mm. Not always, but sometimes.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, that's been the most amazing summary of the family laws in Spain. Thank you so much, Christopher.
Absolutely delighted. Thank you, Alexandra.
Bye-bye.